Welcome, Capital Raisers. On today's show, Randy Langendurfer joins me to talk shop about funds and breaking down war stories from his first deal, including dealing with a fire that burnt down 24 units. We also go into the evolution of his capital raising over time and how you can evolve too. Are you guys ready to raise? If you'd like to explore partnerships with me, talk shop on capital raising, or hire me as a coach, use the scheduling link in the show notes. With that, it's Capital Raiser Show episode 246, and it starts now. Rock and roll, I got Randy Langendurfer on the Capital Raiser Show. Welcome, my friend. How the heck are you?
Hey, Ruben, I'm doing great. I just hope I can keep up with your energy level through this show, man. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Well, I hope you're drinking coffee or Rockstar or something like that, because that's what keeps me going and gets me all crazy. Sometimes I talk too fast, especially when I go on other people's podcasts. But Capital Raiser Show Season 3 now brought to you by Pitch Decks. This is going to be a lot of fun, man. So we've been meeting and hanging out at the Good Egg Investments Real Estate Accelerator Program, back behind closed doors, having a lot of fun hanging out in these masterminds and getting to know each other. But for the audience that hasn't had the privilege of doing that, like myself, can you tell us a little bit about how you got started and how you got into real estate syndication and capital raising, my friend?
I'd be happy to. I got to throw in there, congratulations on your partnership with Richard Wilson. Great
Thank
guy.
You.
I heard you announce that in one of your earlier podcasts I was listening to. Just a great guy and great partnership. I was excited for you. Randy Langendurfer, I'm in Houston, Texas today. Got started in real estate about, 10 years ago or so. Been in multifamily since 2014, so that's about 8 years. I got started as a single family hard money lender. At the time, I was living in Cleveland, Ohio. Had a brother-in-law get me involved with a group out of South Florida. We were flipping houses. We were the hard money lenders. Came to Houston for business purposes. Found multifamily and just never looked back. It's been a blessing. I work a lot at it, but it's not work. So that's the 30-second version of it.
All right. So tell me about, like, when you transitioned from hard money into syndication, were there any steps that you missed right there? I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, I gave you the Rents Reader's Digest version. So the transition went with,
my
wife always says, when you get on these shows, Randy, you don't talk about your family. So I have
to say
that's
not true. Family and sports and extracurricular activities, particularly if you're going to go down like spirituality roads or mindset roads. Those are some of the best podcasts that I do. So
let's roll. But I have to say that I'm a husband of many years. I have 4 children, 5 grandchildren.
Nice.
Live in Houston, Texas. I'm still gainfully employed. So I share what a lot of your audience probably has, at least for a short time anyhow. My runway is very short. But I got into multifamily after moving to Houston, doing some single family flips, hard money flips. I was new. I was trying to take on a new job. Got a little overwhelmed with trying to learn this huge metro area and what neighborhoods were good and what weren't, and comp values and repair budgets and learning a whole new group of people. And so I attended a multifamily conference. One of the big names in Houston here is Lifestyles Unlimited. Great group. And I went to Del Wamsley's weekend course, and he talks one day, entire day, 8 hours on single family. And then he talks another 8 hours on multifamily. And I got really enthralled, and I went to his expo, the Lifestyles Expo annual event. And there I heard Brad Sumrock speak. That's when those two got along and they were able to speak at each other's conferences. And Brad had 3 sessions planned and I happened to be in the first one. And I was so engaged, I stuck around for the 2 other ones, just sat there and heard the same thing repeatedly to absorb it. And the thing, Ruben, that really got me involved in learning it was this concept of, one, non-recourse loans. To think that I can buy a multi-million dollar asset without having to sign personally is still earth-shattering to me. And then secondly, once I began to grasp the concept of syndication, the power of leverage, when I buy a stock or bond, I got to buy the whole thing. I got to pay for 100% of it. In multifamily, all I got to do is the bank's going to pay for 65 to 80% of it in their debt. And you got to find partners or raise limited partners for the other 20, 25%. And like, wow, ching, I can do some of that. So I started out as a limited partner for several years. And I am a finance guy by training. So I'm an MBA, CPA, CISA, et cetera. But I got enthralled with, I'm going to learn this rather than pay the high entrance fee at some of these educational groups. And so I got involved and started going to some of these conferences, met sponsors. I became a limited partner. I worked with limited partners. With general partners, I offered to do due diligence work. I offered, when the guys had a fire, I offered to go out and help them sort it all out. I asked, I wouldn't say bothersome, but I asked routine questions on the financials. And it wasn't until probably 3 years later that I really, I think it was 4 years. It was 2018. I started in 14 and 18 was my first general partnership or sponsorship and where I was raising money.
Interesting. Lots of stuff that we could kind of chat about. I'm not sure that I still really understood the full transition. So you're hard money lender. You went to Lifestyles Unlimited. You heard some amazing speakers. Shout out to them, yep. Right? Lifestyle and Brad Sumrock, those guys. Yep. And then what? So like you took their knowledge and then all of a sudden.
I just started passive investing.
So you started as an LP. You mentioned that. So let's talk about your first syndication. So I want to hear this particular story.
The first one's always fun, right? It was a small raise. Latter part of 2018, we bought a 139 unit property in Beaumont, Texas. So for your listening audience, Beaumont is a blue collar town of about 250,000 people, about 100 miles east of Houston, between here and Lake St. Charles. Great little working class community. I was advised not to buy it because it had flat roofs and a chiller boiler, and it was built in 1965. So don't buy this, Randy, but I was very anxious, and myself and three other guys got together and we needed to raise 1.3 to take it down. And happy to say that I raised half of that alone.
Nice.
At the time with just friends, family, et cetera. And we had, it was an amazing journey. We had a fire 2 months into it, took out 24 of the 139 units, fired the property manager, hired on-site. I was the de facto regional manager for about 10 months. We were able to turn around and sold it at 2x in the investors' money after 21 months was the highlight.
Were you able to finish the restoration of the fire damaged units?
Yes, we certainly did.
Awesome.
That as well as our business plan to remodel other units and some other exterior rehabs, et cetera. So
at the time, were you already living in Houston when you did that deal?
I was. Yes, sir.
Okay. So the chiller boiler, I don't think that you can find those all across the country. Tell me, you know, did you learn anything about that kind of air conditioning, heating system, how it works?
So for your listening audience who may be in other parts of the country that are not familiar with a chiller boiler, all your commercial properties have a chiller. And what they are is they're big water units that the water is chilled and pumped through these pipes in the units. And a fan blows over the fins of a fan and produces cool air in the summer. And they pump hot water in the winter and that creates heat. It's a very efficient, actually, type of heating. But for commercial real estate, it's not the best type and it's just very capital intensive.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did you like run into any capital intensive challenges with that particular system?
That and the roofs, when the point of it is my mentor was correct. I shouldn't have bought it, but it was a good deal in the end after a lot of work. So yes, we replaced one of the boilers, was on our project, on our business plan. The boilers are not too bad. They're about $35,000 each and that was budgeted. The chillers though, if a chiller goes down in the middle of summer in Houston or Beaumont, you got big problems. And the nice thing is on modern units, if air conditioning goes out, it's out in one unit. But if the chiller goes out, it's out in all 139 units. And you got tenants in an uproar. And obviously, I'd be unhappy too. We didn't have that exact happen, but we did have a lot of chiller maintenance issues and repeated calls. And they just become very maintenance heavy. And we had to repipe and refit things and do a lot of maintenance to keep it running. Very thankful they never failed, but it was close a couple of times. And the other time, one of the boilers got busted up in the middle of the winter in Houston. Again, if it gets below 50 degrees in the south, that's like 20 in the north for the natives in the Houston area.
I've been hearing about how humidity is, it's not just worse in the summer, but it's actually worse in the winter too. I never really contemplated that. I guess I haven't been in humid areas in the winter.
Well, it's like anything. You grow accustomed to it and learn to use. But the point of it is back to that boiler system is you don't want that to go out and it started to fail. And we had a couple of nights with no heat in those units.
Ooh.
And when it gets down, it was only 50 degrees. I say it's only 50 because I'm from Ohio. But for the Southerners, that is like 20 to somebody in the north.
True that. And
let's just say we weren't really popular for a couple of nights until we got it back on. So lesson learned, if somebody says it's a chiller boiler system, run from it.
How fun to explore the different war stories that you came across on your very first syndication. I want to hear more about how you dealt with the 24 burnt units. I think it was 24, right?
Yeah, it's 24. So one of the worst days of my life, I'm in my office, Ruben, and I get a call from the property manager. Says, Randy, the building's on fire.
Whoa.
I said, what? I'm literally 2 months. We're not even 2 months into ownership. We're not even 2 months into my first asset. And I've heard that if you do this long enough, you're going to have a fire or something catastrophic on the property sooner or later. But I really didn't think in the first 2 months. So 24 units took down. We had just replaced the roofs on this building, and it burns through the roof. And these older properties like that are built out of wood, and they're like tinder. I mean, they catch fire. They're just going up. Thank goodness, Ruben, nobody was injured.
Yeah, God bless. That's amazing.
Praise God. There's nobody injured on it. And we just were able, that's the blessing in it all. But then you start about the rebuild. The first thing you do is you got to make sure you take care of the tenants. Mm-hmm. So American Red Cross comes out that night, starting to give temporary housing to people. And then they want to come back the next day and get their goods out of their apartment. And you can't let them out yet because the fire marshal's got, can't let them in yet because the fire marshal's got to come in and figure out the cause of the fire before anybody can do anything on the property. And, you know, that's at the mercy of the city. And then you start the rebuilding program, and that's literally gutting it and first getting the contractor. Thankfully, we had a contractor that we were already working with on the rehab. So they ended up just getting the rebuild project as well. And then your revenue starts to drop. And we all talk about getting insurance for these things. And we had insurance. We had good insurance to make sure that we had loss of rents covered in our insurance policy. But silly me, I was thinking that happened right away. Well, that doesn't happen until the project's entirely rebuilt and re-leased up. So it was 11 months from the time fire happened to the time we got it rebuilt and started to get leasing again. So you can't even apply for the lost revenue. So you got to float the revenue. My point of it is there.
Mm.
And most importantly, you got to talk to investors. That's where I just really tried to take a personal touch.
So how did your investors respond, your limited partners and whatnot?
Well, we had a pretty hefty business plan and some pretty hefty returns, but obviously they all go on hold right away because you're preserving cash. They were all very gracious. I'm thankful for that. They kind of understand nothing you do. It burnt down a quarter of the units and the revenue is affected, but they were gracious. But then after the rebuild starts, they're in month 6, 10, 12 of ownership. And they're saying, when am I going to get a distribution? Mm-hmm. We're still fighting the insurance company, all that stuff. We didn't get any distribution until the end of year one, but we did get a small one. And then about 21 months in, we sold it and we're thankful. So great learning lesson.
I bet.
Never want to repeat it again, though.
Yeah. So thank you for letting me explore this very first one. We'll get into the fund that you have and some of your future things that you want to do and your existing business model. I want to dive a little bit deeper into the capital raise. So you raised half of the money for this first deal. Well, I guess you've been in the real estate business for quite some time. Did you raise money for hard money too? Was it anything similar or different for,
no,
you know, raising?
We didn't do any hard money raising. We did it all out of our item partner, out of our own pockets. We did the hard money lending out of our own. We only did a couple projects at a time, so it wasn't a tremendous amount, but it was a lot at the time for me. You have bank loans there and stuff too, but you still got to put up much of it yourself. So, but no, that was my first raise. I had no experience, didn't have any idea what kind I was going to get. Just kind of said, we got to do this sooner or later. And well, it's like anything, sooner or later, you got to pull the trigger, stop talking about it. So we did it.
So are you saying that you had so much confidence in syndication from the things that you had been studying that you projected that onto your limited partners? Or tell me more about how you were able to get them to believe in your vision for moving into syndication when they didn't know you as a syndicator.
That's a really good statement, because I think your first one like that, when you don't have it, you're purely leveraging your relationships with people. At least the ones I did, I purely leveraged the relationships I had with people. I know I have one of my investors to this day was in that first deal, and he's a very wealthy individual. He plopped down $100,000, like you and I put down $10. And he was just kind of just, okay, I hear you, go away and do this. And then when we doubled it in 21 months, and now he's been in like 6 or 7 deals with me, investments. He's a believer. He understands the model. But the first one I think is purely just relational, and it's calling. I didn't have fancy emails and solicitations set up. It was just sending personal emails to people and calling them one-on-one and trying to make an appointment. And I tried to, obviously we had working, we knew we had an LOA and a PSA. So you're working on those relationships as that's evolving. But the first one is just grinding.
Interesting.
At least it was for me.
Okay. So let's jump a little bit forward. You've done multiple syndications. How has your capital raising strategy changed over time? What are you doing now? I know you're part of the Real Estate Accelerator and you're there to strengthen your capital raising skills. But I mean, just from what you've done, I'm kind of interested to hear what you've done to change so far the way that you raised back then, just dialing for dollars and calling your relationships versus what you're doing now or trying to do.
I'd like to think I've become a little more sophisticated. So today I'm always a big educational person. So nice. You mentioned the Good Egg. So I'm a part of that. And I'm a part of Rod Khalif's mastermind as well.
Nice.
So it's always about networking with peers and colleagues, but I'm trying to be much more sophisticated today. So you start out with a list of, I don't know, 20 or 50 people you tried to raise money from. And today I've got several hundreds, and I've got a goal in the next 12 to 18 months to triple that, to get over 1,000. So that becomes a little more iffy. So I've done a very aggressive. I've hired consultants to help me do Facebook paid ads, which I found not worth the money and didn't get a lot of success on. And so now I'm doing LinkedIn, listen to my mentors, developing my avatar description, who am I really searching, trying to attract, and creating language around that hopefully would attract them. But realizing that, as you know, Ruben, more than anybody, I mean, it's a funnel, right? So you're trying to always bringing people into the top of the funnel. So now that I've done 5 raises, people don't have unlimited funds. And so you have to find new investors to keep that funnel going. So that by the time they get to the bottom of the funnel, ready to invest, I think that's a given 6 to 12 month process. I'm still an LP investor myself, so I get it solicited a lot. But to me, I want to make sure I really know, like, and trust somebody. And to do that, that's a chunk of time. I have gotten those that come in and just heard me on a podcast or saw my website and plopped down some money, but that's few and far between. Most of it is just building relationships. So through social media, I'm doing much more active. I'm creating monthly newsletters to my list, trying to keep them engaged. I've written blogs, and now I'm trying to also interject between the monthly newsletter, blog, email blast to my investors. So I'm trying to identify touch points and keeping my name and my company's name in front of those investors. Mm-hmm. So it's not just I'm only contacting them just, hey, have you got $50,000 for this deal?
That doesn't work too good.
Not very often anyhow. Not very often.
I want to jump in to talk about the funds. But before we talk about this, I got to ask you about something that you mentioned before the show, which is that by the time this show airs, you are currently a W-2, but you will no longer be by the time this show airs. Tell me what's going on there.
So I've reached that point in my life where I'm ready to step aside from the corporate world. And yes, by the time this airs, I will have announced my resignation after a long tenured career. So I'm employed at the Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas as the VP of Compliance and Audit. So I have one of those governance jobs that I really enjoy. I truthfully enjoy, but it's just time for me. I have really kind of grown the real estate to a point where it needs more attention, and I want to give it more attention. So hopefully at the end of March, 2023, I will be stepping aside and doing real estate full time, and
congrats.
Looking forward to just finding more investors and more deals and speaking and talking and just building the network.
Congratulations in advance. And are you going to be helping other people? You know, do you want to inspire other people to quit their job too?
Yes, yes, and yes. So I want to inspire other people to quit their jobs. Part of my mission is, I always say I'm a coach in the Rod Khalif's organization today, and I'm contemplating starting my own coaching, but I truly enjoy that. I spend a lot of time with, especially new investors. They'll call and I'll never hear from them again, or I'll talk to them and put them on the list. And so, yes, I truly enjoy giving back. Ruben, there's been so many people that have built into my real estate journey that I think it's imperative that we all give back and on a free basis.
Yeah, I don't even think it's much of a choice. I think people just do it naturally, just because that's the whole culture of the industry. As a general mindset, everybody's they operate from abundance everywhere. Like, they help their own competitors a lot of the time. Like, you can't even believe it. Annie Dickerson, for example, and this is gonna be interesting. She's probably going to encourage me and allow me to take some stuff that I've learned from her and some stuff other people like Richard C. Wilson, I'll take stuff from them. I'm probably going to launch my own capital raising program as well. And it's all going to be about helping people create the ability to capital raise. And a lot of the skill that I've developed is from people like you and my mentors that have taught me how to do this business and it's scary.
Yeah.
This is kind of the very fun part, because I know that when I'm afraid of something, everything that you want is on the other side of fear. So for me, it's an indication that I should do it. I want to talk to you offline about being a coach. I have somebody that could help you launch your own program. And I think I know that they've been helping a lot of my friends do some very amazing things. So we'll chat about that later. But anyways, I want to hear about the funds here, because we got about 6 minutes, maybe a little bit more than that, to chat before we go into the lightning round. So your new business model, the kind of properties that you want to take down, and why the fund? I want to hear that.
Well, first of all, let me congratulate you, my friend, on starting. That's applause. If I had a voice clap for you, that's exciting too.
Thank you.
Today, I have found success in 2022 in really joint venture relationships of partnering with other people. So I first started out in this and I wanted to do everything myself, or thought I should do everything myself. I should underwrite the deal. I should market it. I should do the brokers. And I've just found I've been able to exponentially. I've done 4 deals in 2020 and since November 21. I'm excited about that. And those deals are all good. They're different points though. So I've partnered with somebody, a group out of that's really proficient in Dallas. We took down in November of 21, a 396 brand new Class A unit. We took down a 60 unit here in Dallas with another group that we both know Houston very well. I took down this, we'll talk about in a second, this first asset in a fund in Greensville, South Carolina. And so why do I do that? Because I partnered with a group there that's got experience in that local market. They've owned, gone full cycle, and have a proven track record. I can jump into those markets and be an instant credibility with brokers if I choose to. And the criteria for me is the Sun Belt states, high growth of income and high growth of population, targeting those areas. You're going to de-risk your investment because the macroeconomics are so good. And then in September, we just closed I closed one in Tucson, Arizona, with another partner that has got a lot of proficiency. He specializes just in Tucson. And he asked me to come alongside of him. And so I take a variety of roles in those, anywhere from KP to money raiser to asset management to everything. And it's fun. Fast forward, I said the one in Greenville, South Carolina was partnering with a group called Park Capital. And they started this fund that I've got into. And the first asset was purchased in August of 22, a lovely 132 units in Greenville, South Carolina, as I mentioned, 1997 build. We've got it 2 months now and raising rents, making some beautiful additions, should be a good asset addition. And the current property I'm working on is we're raising for a fund that is, as for the Park Capital Fund, the second asset in that fund is in the Daytona Beach MSA. Cool. It's a 120 unit called Country at Courtside. It's the 120 unit property built in 1983, I think it is. And so that market, again, is projected to have rent growth of 17% in 2022. Is that amazing?
That is pretty good.
I mean, that's amazing statistic.
Well, Florida in general has insane migration, correct? And favorable governments and all kinds of really cool things. And it's like, did I get this correct? It's a no tax state, like income tax?
I believe that's correct. Yes.
That's great.
Yes. Florida, Tennessee, Texas, Colorado are all no income tax states. That's why everybody migrates there. But that's why real estate taxes are also so high, because that's the revenue.
That's true too. I knew that about Texas. I wasn't so sure about Florida.
But so this is a beautiful asset. It's the comps right across the street from the same vintage are getting 200 to 250 bucks more per door than we are. All we got to do is put some nice room improvements in there, do the other business plan items we have for the outside. And there's no rational reason why we shouldn't get those 250 to 250 unit rent bumps as well. So we're excited and look forward to it.
So let's do a little bit of clarifying. So the fund that you have is not a limited partner in multiple deals. Rather, you have a fund that is a co-GP in multiple deals. How do you have that set up? I'm curious about this.
So the fund is designed to raise 30 million bucks to go out and buy as many assets we can for 30 million bucks. It's got an extension. It can go up to 50 million bucks if we choose. So that's the premise, is that you put money in the fund as an LP, the fund goes out and buys. So I'm a general partner as well as a limited partner in the first asset we bought. I put money in the fund, which purchased the first asset in Greenville, South Carolina.
As a limited partner?
As a limited partner.
Okay.
I'm also a general partner, but I put money as a limited partner.
Okay, let's stop right there. I really want to dive into this because I think these nuances about funds, that I don't think people understand them. So your fund strokes a check into somebody's syndication, but then in addition to just being a limited partner, it also takes on advisory roles or board of advisory or ongoing obligations or extra special communications. What does it do in addition to just stroking a check? Tell me about that part.
Well, the fund buys the asset. The fund buys the asset, but it's set up just
the entire asset or just a part of it?
No, it buys the fund. So you, and as a limited partner, you invest in the Park Capital Fund. The Park Capital Fund goes out and buys the two buildings we just talked about, just like a normal syndication is. It's just that it's a fund as the syndication versus two or three people. It's very simple. The fund is the one that's buying these assets.
It's not a partnership opportunity. It's not stroking into somebody else's deal. It's
correct.
The fund is the owner of the deal. Okay, well, that's an interesting distinction too.
It's not a fund of funds. It's just a fund. A fund of fund is when I create a fund and then go out and invest in somebody else's fund.
Yes.
No, you're buying as a limited partner into the Park Capital Fund, and the Park Capital Fund goes out and buys assets. And so the nice thing about that is investors get diversification.
Yes.
So if I didn't put any more money in this as an LP, I'd get a piece of the action of the second and third purchases. So I would get the advantages of all those in that fund. Now, I would have a smaller piece, but I'd have a smaller piece and triple the pie, the size of the pie versus the first time. So it's meant to provide diversification across the Southeast. It's meant to provide diversification by location and building types. And so the first asset is in Greensville, South Carolina. The second one is in Daytona Beach area. And so that whole corridor there of the Southeast is what we're looking for. I get diversification in me from the Sun Belt, as I mentioned, as a general partner. The limited partners get diversification, like I said, lower risk. They get lower risk because there's multiple assets involved.
Yes.
And they get, it's a nice steady cash flow. It's cash flowing already day one. So nice. We're off to a good start. Randy, yeah, the fund is a little bit different.
I asked Brian Burke to explain why he prefers doing a fund for multiple assets. Well, I guess a fund typically is going to be multiple assets unless it's like a single purpose vehicle. But he said this to me. He's like, when you're syndicating deals, your range of investor experience is all over the place. Some, you could crush it, get a home run on one deal, and then another deal may be a thorn on your side. But when you put a bunch of different multifamily or whatever kind of commercial real estate assets into a fund, it smooths out the volatility of this, just kind of like the stock market is very volatile. And that's why people get into real estate. But if you have multiple assets, the entire thing does extremely well. So I thought that was a brilliant perspective. And that exactly is what you're talking about when you say it diversifies, right? So it smooths out that volatility and allows you to get into multiple markets, which is absolutely brilliant. So I love the fund structure.
And from my view as a general partner or a syndicator, I'm looking at bringing opportunities to my investor club. So it's not for everybody. I have some people that don't like the idea at all. I have other people that just run towards it. So it's just for me as my investor club, I'm just trying to bring opportunities for them and pointing out the pros and cons.
Amazing stuff. All right, cool, man. Let's jump into the lightning round. Let's start with this. Best vacation you have ever taken?
Hilton Head, South Carolina. Love it. Played golf, sat on the beach, nice condo, great food. Love it.
Fantastic. Favorite book of any kind?
Favorite book of all time is the Bible.
Tell me the craziest thing that you've seen during your travels.
I've traveled the world with business. And so I've been in China and seen in Asia and Latin America. And I think, I don't know, it's craziest, but it's the extreme poverty and just how blessed we are to be Americans today. You just never feel so blessed as if you've been to those regions of the world. To a little bit different definition of crazy, but.
No, that's perfect. I've been to third world countries right during hurricane season and seen all their furniture out on the streets and flooded entire little mini villages. And it's crazy. Red Cross there handing out water. So like, we are very blessed to live in the United States. And when something happens here, we have a great deal of support that helps us get back on our feet very quickly. So very lucky in this country. Can you tell me about a moment that changed the trajectory of your life?
I'll say on the personal side, when I got married, I got to give a lot of credit to my wife, changed my trajectory. On the professional side, I think what changed the trajectory is when I really began to embrace multifamily. That was back about 8 years ago. And then ever since then, it's been a journey that I've been building on.
I love those answers, especially the wife one. Man, my wife changed my life in a big, big way. All right, how about this? Best way to raise capital from your perspective? Short answer on this.
To me, it's old-fashioned bird dogging, just boots on the ground, calling, emailing, following up, whatever it takes.
Do you have any hacks for breaking through your limiting beliefs?
Doing them. I mean, I remember the first time I wrote a check for a limited partnership deal. And then I mentioned when I did the first GP deal about just got to do it. And now I just was doing two simultaneously raises. I didn't think I could ever do that. And I was out doing two simultaneously raises. So you just got to do it.
Do your spiritual philosophies have anything to do with your success in business?
Oh, yeah. Everything to do with it. They're the foundation of it. It's still why we're here and the desire to give back and the desires to help others along the way. I say at the end of the day, I don't want to be known as the greatest real estate investor. I hope I'm known as a dad and a father and a husband.
I love it.
Much better than I am a real estate investor.
Two thumbs up and claps your way. So right back at you. All right. What do you love about golfing? What's your handicap? Tell me about this.
Well, I do enjoy the game of golf. It's tradition. I don't know if you're a golfer, but when you get to meet new people and you're standing on the first tee and someone will ask, well, what's your handicap? And so I traditionally say, well, my handicaps are my woods, my irons, and my putters.
Hilarious.
So I'm probably I'm a 17 or 18 handicap, but I really enjoy the sport.
Hilarious. All right. Here's my trademark question, and one that I love to ask people. Have you ever experienced a miracle or had a near-death experience?
Yes.
Tell me.
January 13th of 2022, I experienced a severe heart attack and was dead and brought back to life.
My God. Actually, my father did the same thing. That's crazy.
It was just a miracle. I had a 100%, for those that have nothing about medicine, I had 100% blockage in the LAD. It's called the left anterior descending artery, also known as the widowmaker. I had 100% blockage, and only 6% of the people that experienced that survived it.
Thank God you're here with us, brother. That's
amen,
amazing.
I agree.
All right, what impact would you like to leave in the world?
Yeah, my impact is to help. First of all, is really at the end of the day that I'm known as, like I said, a father, a husband, along the way there, building into other people's lives and on the real estate journey. I hope that comes through of generally, I mean, this of trying to help people and just spending time with them wherever they are on that journey. If it's a phone call or an email, or I just want to bounce something off you, Randy, I'd love to chat with you.
Mind-blowing answers on the lightning round. Thanks for entertaining us on that part of the show. Shout out to the Capital Raiser Nation. Thanks for tuning in. Please leave us a 5-star written review, and shout out to my company, Legacy Acquisitions, and our sponsors, Good Egg Investment, Syndication Pro, Apartment Educators, Family Office Club, and PitchDecks.com. If you want to pay full price for those, make sure and just go direct. But if you want to save some money, like $1,000 off those programs, go check out their deals at CapitalRaiserShow.com. Randy, how does the audience get a hold of you, my friend?
Ruben, thanks again. It's really been fun. I enjoy the conversation. Easiest way is I'm on social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, my webpage, which is invest-arc.com. There's a contact us on there. Love to chat with anybody.
Okay. Any last words of wisdom for the aspiring capital raiser or syndicator as they scale on their journey?
Take the long view. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. Continue education and networking.
Man, you know what I love about these shows is, like, you and I have talked a little bit, but I feel like I know you even better, like a lot better, just getting on this interview with you. So, man, if you're thinking about starting a podcast out there, just the ability to connect with somebody at a higher level and ask them all kinds of questions that you typically wouldn't in just general conversation, it's worth it just in itself, man. So this has been a blast hanging out with you, getting to know you, and now interview you on the Capital Raiser Show, man. I look forward to hanging out with you into the future and following your progress, my friend. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks again, Ruben.
The Capital Raiser Show. Rock and roll.